report writing, which is difficult in the sense that reports as a form of professional writing are very, very widely used, but the form and the structure and those sorts of elements which relate to them as a particular genre is quite generic. And so it's difficult sometimes to say, when we're talking about how reports should be written or how they should be structured or how they should be set out, what sorts of things they should contain. Because invariably, when I do this, people, you know, go to a workplace and compare what their organisation has done as a form of, you know, report writing, and come back and say, but we did this differently in, you know, we did this differently in my workplace. You know, what are you talking about? For that reason, I want to make it clear from the beginning that what I'm saying is really a matter of guidelines and a matter of generalities, because reports as a form of professional writing will vary considerably from place to place, depending upon the conventions of the organisation for whom they are written. However, having said that, I believe that it's an important aspect of any course in professional writing, because it is so widely used. The report as a form of writing is used in pretty well every aspect of business. It's also used in science in a slightly different form, which I'll talk about, but it's also a very, very widely used and understood form of writing, which is important for students to be able to grasp and to be able to use. Unfortunately, unlike some other forms of professional writing, including journalism, including copywriting, media releases, and so on, it's not the sexy and the groovy and the hip form that students generally, you know, feel the need to know about. But I believe it's, given that it is the most widely used, it is a very, very important one nonetheless. So having said that, let's start from the position of thinking about what actually is a report and how are they used in a business environment. If we look at my definition on the overhead, generally reports can be said to be documents that are written on a given subject to convey information and ideas, and sometimes to make recommendations. So you can gather from that it is a very, very general, that's a very, very general kind of definition, but it sort of covers a whole range of different things. The other explanation that I have there is that reports are written to provide comprehensive information, analysis and expert opinion. So therefore they actually have a number of functions, depending upon what they're being written for, the purposes they're being written for, as to how they will be structured and which elements they will include. They sometimes can be a written record of research. They can be a written record of information and ideas that have been within a company, and they are very often kept within the files of that company as some kind of a record and some kind of evidence of what has gone before, so that if people need to refer to previous research or previous investigations or previous discussions about an issue or a problem or a proposal in the past, very often they will go and find the report that has been written and analyse it in terms of what has been done before. So from the point of view of an effective report, there are several things that an effective report should aim to do. And again, the point of what I'm saying here is to give a really general kind of an overview rather than a specific one, and I will make some variations, discussions in terms of talking about scientific reports, which are slightly different again. So the aim essentially, in a really general way, is to help a reader decide what they should do. So what should they do about what, you ask? What they should do about whatever the problem is, whatever the issue is, whatever the area that they are investigating is. And that can be anything. It can be anything that is relevant to the company or whatever. Generally speaking, in terms of a formula, if you like, reports, what constitutes a good report includes those that are easy to understand, so that they, in terms of the language that they use, and we must consider that reports can be both internal and external documents. So the choice of language, the use of jargon, the use of technical terms, diagrams, etc., really needs to be decided in the context of who will read it. Reports need to be clear. Now again, that makes reference to the language that's used, but also to the structure, the way it's set out, the way the elements or the segments are identified, the way they are ordered, etc. As long as it needs to be, so that's the old adage of how long should something be, you know, how long is a piece of string, as long as it needs to be and no longer. So given we have to remember that reports as business documents are going to be read within the business environment, and so they're not something that people will necessarily sit down and read for pleasure. It's not something they're going to read from cover to cover, you know, for bedtime reading. It's something that they will read to get certain bits of information or certain opinions or certain analysis. So therefore, you know, bogging it down with unnecessary detail will merely impede that particular activity. It needs to be complete in terms of the information that's included there. So in terms of researching what goes into the report, the researcher or the person writing it needs to make sure that they have all the facts, that they have all the necessary information, that they've done all the background reading, so that when they provide that information, it's there, it's complete, and it also needs to be correct and verifiable, because very often reports are written in order for people further up the hierarchy or the chain of command to make decisions. They are written to enable people to be informed about the background, the situation, the details, so that they can make decisions. So if the information is not complete, or if, you know, there's stuff left out, if it isn't correct, if it can't be verified, in certain circumstances this can have quite a significant impact on the credibility of a company, the credibility of a manager, and in some cases the safety of, you know, consumers or workers or any of the people who may be affected by the outcomes of the report. So reports are used in business and in science for a range of factors. I've got some of those up there. Now that's not an exclusive list. There are lots of other things. Generally speaking, in where I've taught this previously, I've had people who've been sales people who've done, you know, sales reports, who've done accident reports, police reports, all those sorts of things. The term is used in, you know, 101 different contexts. But in general, purposes of reports can be to request or to justify a proposal, spending money perhaps, building another building, recruiting more staff, undertaking research or an investigation into something. So where it's important to be able to justify this, to request it, to justify it to superiors or to the people who make decisions, the form in which it is written is the report. they can be used to describe a work in progress. So, you know, a progress report, you would have heard of that. Something where, okay, what has been done so far, by whom has it been done, what have been some of the problems, and what else is there to do, when will it be finished? Reports can be descriptive in that they can be used to describe or to record events. So, police reports in that particular case would be an example of that. You know, what happened, when did it happen, what was the outcome, who were the people involved, and, you know, what was done about it, etc. In a scientific context, reports are used to record research. And the last one is to investigate and to analyse the problem. Now, in that particular case, when it's used in a scientific context, some of the structures and the elements that I'll be talking about are used a little differently, and I'll make reference to that a little bit later on. So, it can be used to record research, and they can be used to investigate and to analyse a problem. So what is the problem? How will we investigate it? Can be a record of the way that we've gone about investigating something, what kind of a methodology was used, you know, what were the results, how do you analyse those results, etc, etc. So on the general scale of things, reports can be both informative or persuasive or some kind of combination of or mixture of both. It doesn't necessarily have to be one or the other. Now, just as with any form of writing, there are typically a range of stages in the production of a report. So these are really, really general, and depending upon, again, what the report is used as to how these actually apply. Okay. Generally speaking, we'd say that, okay, investigation, planning, writing and revision. So the first part is where, having identified and quantified, brainstormed, if you like, or established the purpose of a report, the necessary and relevant information is collected. So this can be done in a whole range of different ways, depending upon the type of report that it is, and we'll talk about those in a moment. Okay, once you actually have the information itself, and you need to consider, okay, who is actually going to read this, and that will govern, all right, how you select information, how you sort it, how you structure it. It will reflect the purpose of the report and the audience. Now the writing part comes further down. So people tend to think that when we talk about writing, we just suddenly, you know, pull up our computer, put the keyboard, you know, plug in the keyboard, and away we go. The writing is actually one of the last stages. So you have to collect the information, you have to investigate first, you have to collect the information, and then you have to actually sit down and write it. And that is probably the most difficult stage, because we have to put all these bits together in a way that will suit our audience, will achieve our purpose, and in a way to make sure that all the relevant sort of issues regarding writing, clear, concise, complete, critical, that sort of thing, is achieved. And once we've done that, as I've said previously, the revision stage is really, really important, because before we submit something, we need to either check the literal and the mechanical things like the spelling and the punctuation, etc., etc., but also the structural things. Now, are these things in the right order? Are the headings clear? Have I made it sufficiently clear to the audience? And generally speaking, the best way to do that is to have somebody else read over it for you. To read it aloud, as I've said before, in terms of grammar and punctuation and things like that. But to have an unbiased eye look over what you've done, an objective eye look over what you've done, to make sure that it is actually doing what you think it's doing. because that's the difficult thing with any kind of writing. Okay. All right. Now, like I said, you can see from that particular graphic that the majority of the time is really spent collecting information, investigating. All right. A large amount of time is thinking about the planning. Writing, obviously, is time-consuming. And the revising part, which people don't consider, tend to think of as being, of major importance, is still given, according to this particular statistic, 20% of the time. And it's amazing that even if you go back, years, you can look at something that you've written and find, information and mistakes and things that you could have done a little better. Okay, alright, here's some other stages that you might consider. Right. And again, these are really, really general. Okay, think about the purpose. Alright, what is it that I want this to achieve? Now when we do our exercises in class, we'll give it more of a definition of this. Okay, what is the purpose of it? Why am I writing this? Alright, what do I want this to achieve? Okay, do I want to persuade my reader? Do I want to, just purely give information? Do I want to convince them of my particular point of view? Now, what you decide, whether it's persuasive or whether it's informational or whatever, will determine how you go about collecting information, but also how you go about actually writing it and structuring it. Alright, you need to consider the reader themselves. Alright, the reader might be, for example, okay, are they familiar with the information? Are they familiar with the area that you're going to be writing about? Will they understand the language that you use? Do they have a particular point of view? Are they in favour or against what you are going to be writing? Now, the answers to each of those will, again, determine what information you include, how you include it, how you write it, the language that you use, the structure or the order of information, etc. Alright, what kind of ideas do you have? And this is kind of a brainstorming stage, if you like. Alright. What kind of ideas? It's a good idea to actually sit down and do a bit of a rough mind map. Everything that comes to your head within the first 5 minutes, write it down and see what happens. Because it's particularly useful in a group type scenario, and very often reports and things like that are written as collaborative documents as well. Okay. Collect the information. Where do I get this from? We'll talk about this further on. Sort and evaluate it. Okay, what of the information, which bits go together, evaluate. Is it useful or not useful? Throw out the things that aren't useful to the purpose, that aren't clear to the reader, that won't achieve the objective. Right. Write a draft. Again, sit down and don't struggle too much initially. Just write down what you think. And then revise it. So once you've got it down, it's much easier to move and to cut and paste and to rewrite than to try and do all this on the first time through, because you generally speaking won't do that. And ultimately submit your final copy. Okay. Now, in the planning stage, alright, what the questions that you consider, alright, what is the purpose? Why am I writing this? Again, these seem like really obvious questions, particularly when we've been talking a lot about this in relation to other forms of writing. And so I guess the answer to that is that in this particular way, it isn't different. It isn't different to other forms of writing. Okay, so am I just providing information or ideas? Am I clarifying something? Am I making recommendations? You might be doing any or all of those things, or you might be doing other things. And from the point of view of the reader, as we said when we talked about audience analysis previously, how much do they already know? Because that might might influence how much background you have to give, how simple you might need to make the language, or whether you can use technical jargon. If it is a technical report, do you have to give a glossary so that the reader understands it? Who has requested it? That will be, again, influence the persuasive direction, if you like. What do they want to know? What is their point of view? Okay. I put this graphic together as an example. Fairly simple one, and it really will depend upon the type of audience and the purpose of the report as to where you get information from. And we do tend to think of information gathering, if you like, as something that we have to do over the internet, or in some cases, things that information that we have to do by, primary sources, like doing a survey or a questionnaire or a ministry questionnaire or something like that. But it doesn't have to be. Now, the example I've given there talks about the topic, the general topic of, say, occupational health and health and safety in the workplace. Now, if you are doing a general sort of research report about occupational health and safety, all right, there might be a range of resources. Okay. They don't have to be books, they don't have to be libraries, they can be other things, as you can see there. Alright, so some example, obviously, the internet is one which these days is probably one of the primary sources of information. Television, reports on current affairs, shows or whatever. People who deal with these kinds of things every day. So, work cover, the Department of Labour and Industry, government departments of all sorts. They often have information, they often have statistics, they often have annual reports and things like that that they issue. You might choose to interview people who are involved in areas where occupational health and safety is an issue. So, experts, such as, people who are involved in it, such as removalists. Medical experts, support groups for people who are injured, perhaps. Are there other people who may have knowledge in this area? There are other sources such as the Bureau of Statistics who may have information about accident statistics in the workplace or the number of a breakup of the kind of occupations that are more likely to have issues related to occupational health and safety. Unions and professional associations often collect this kind of data on behalf of their members. And often this stuff is published in journals, in the libraries of those organisations, in the papers that they produce. There's other secondary sources, and they might include libraries. And libraries, again, we tend to think of, when we say library, we tend to think of the university library in our case, or the local council library. But large organisations themselves, for example, will often have libraries of their own. I've worked for the Commonwealth Bank for many years, and they had an economic research library where they had, a large amount of data on economic issues, and they subscribe to a whole range of journals that may not have been found in other places. The libraries of unions and other professional associations are also a really, really good source of specialist information. So, libraries can be wide and varied, and they don't necessarily have to be those that have immediate public access, but in certain cases, in newspapers, for example, newspapers will have their own libraries. They'll have back issues and copies of their reports and things like that going over a long period of time. Historical archives and things like that are kept, for example, in the State Library of New South Wales, for example. So I guess the point that I'm making in using that graphic is that the type of information that you gather, it can be wide, it can be varied, it doesn't have to be just restricted to the internet or to books. Okay. Now, I've got up here a graphic which refers to the general structure of a report. Now, what I'm talking about here is a business report. As I've said, the structure of a scientific report is slightly different, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But generally speaking, the elements, if you like, can be divided up into, all right, the front matter, the body, and the end matter. And each of those, in turn, has its own elements. If you can think of a report in the way that it's produced as a unit of information, think about how, as we've said before, in terms of other types of professional writing, how people use it. You have to structure it in such a way that people can find the information within the report and can read it, allow them to dip, to skim, to scan, to flip, all of those things that we know that people do, and to actually see the structure and to access the bits that are relevant to them. So a report is different from, say, an essay. You'd be familiar with essays in university or in high school. And an essay is generally, the teacher gives you a proposition or a question, and you sit down and, okay, yes, you do have an introduction, yes, you have a body, yes, you have a conclusion, but generally speaking, you don't have any other external devices, if you like, to enable people to, go through and find out the bits. You really have to, read from beginning to end to figure out the argument. A report, in another sense, is structured in such a way as to allow people to dip in and out as they will. So the three elements, or the three major sort of sections, if you like, include, the front matter. And so that, in general, allows people to identify the reader and the author and the title, allows them to have an overview by the executive summary. Now, in scientific reports, an executive summary is called an abstract. In some cases, it will be called a synopsis. Now, all of those things basically mean the same thing, and we'll talk about what they are a little bit later. And the front matter allows them to see a structure. Okay, so the structure is drawn up in the table of contents. The main information, the main guts, if you like, of the report is contained in the report body. Now, the report body in itself, the subsections, can include an introduction. Now, in each of these, there are subsections, if you like, discussion, conclusions, recommendations. Recommendations, for example, are not appropriate in all cases because what you're writing about may not need recommendations. Recommendations are plans of action. Now, if you're just doing something descriptive, you don't need a plan of action, so that's an optional element. And the end matter is the bits that they may choose to look at if they want to. And that can include appendices, which is supplementary material. There may be statistics, maybe diagrams, maybe copies of a questionnaire or something like that, maybe a glossary of terms, etc., as I said before, if you're writing a highly technical report, and your bibliography. Your bibliography, as we've talked about before, is your list of references. And regardless of whether you're writing an academic style of report, or whether you are writing a business report, a bibliography is essential. You must always acknowledge where your information has come from. Okay, let's have a look at some of these. Now again, how this is done really will depend to a certain extent on the conventions that your organisation demands. So I'm making sort of general comments. But again, if you go to work and your company says, no, we want your title page to look like this, we want it to have this information, that's fine. That's it. What they're saying is not wrong. Reports are very generic. The structure to some extent will be is very much depending on the organisation. But just in general, for example, it should always identify the title of the subject, it should identify the writer, the name of the organisation or their department. Now this is particularly relevant if, say for example, it's an external, report to an external body. Who are you? You put your name, but what do you represent, in other words? If it's internal, that is going between departments, you know, which department do you represent? Okay. Who has it been written for? Again, the organisation, etc., and the date. Now, what this element does is first of all, obviously, it allows people to know exactly where it comes from at first glance, but also to, at a future time, contextualise when it was written and why it was written. And that's one of the important sort of historical functions, if you like, of a report. Now, the executive summary is a, or the synopsis, or abstract, whatever you, however you want to call it, is a difficult thing to write. It's actually something that should be written last. What it does is enable someone who picks up your report to read through it and say, okay, do I want to be bothered reading the rest of this? Is this going to provide me with the information or maybe even the perspective that I need for my research? If you know, rather than read through the whole thing, it should basically enable the reader, by the way that it summarises the material, to just in general to get a fair grasp of why it was written, what are the points that it made, what conclusions or recommendations does it make. Generally speaking, it's always usually on its own page, particularly in business reports, on its own page. It's also known, as I said, as a synopsis or an abstract in scientific reports. And it summarises, basically, probably one paragraph or one or two paragraphs each of the major elements of the report body. Okay, depending upon, what the report is about and how much information. It's usually about something like half or three quarters of a page. And it's usually written last. And it's written last because you can't write it until you've written all the rest of it. Just the rest of the report. Again, some of these might sort of seem a fairly obvious statement, but it's important to perhaps think of it from a different point of view than you may have considered before. Alright, a table of contents. We've all seen tables of contents. Tables of contents exist in textbooks, any number of professional documents that we're familiar with. But have you ever thought about why it's used? Okay. Alright, obviously to enable the reader to find the bits, find the part, find the page number on which the part exists. But it's also to allow them to see the structure. And the structure, which can be the headings, the order in which information is addressed, which information is addressed, how is that information addressed, and that would be, you could tell that from the headings, the way that the headings are phrased, if you like. What are the sections and subsections, and you can tell that by, in this particular example, certain things are in caps and in bold. So obviously they're the major sections. The subsections, as indicated by the numbering, are indented and have other sections there. Alright. And it can also include supplementary material in both the front matter and in the end matter. Now, can I just say it's not necessary to put the title page in the table of contents in the table of contents. I know a lot of students have actually done that in the past, and it isn't generally the way it's done. Now, the other thing too is traditionally the page numbers, again, this might seem like a statement of the bleeding really obvious, but the page numbers are on the right hand side of the page. Now, you know, sometimes people do it the other way around, and I think it's more awkward because we are used to reading left to right. Okay. Now, in terms of an introduction, think of a report to a certain extent, you know, like a journey of some sort. Okay. We have to start somewhere. We have to, like a film, when you first go to see a film, the opening few scenes will introduce the characters, will introduce the setting, will give you some kind of a background scenario, and basically that information is important to allow you, as a film watcher, to understand the rest of the story. It is the starting point for the journey. And that does seem like a strange analogy to use when we're talking about professional writing. But the reality is that a report introduction, probably in the same way that the introduction to an essay or whatever, but probably more in a more structured way, that function is what the introduction does. Now, how detailed the introduction is will depend on the type of report that it is. It will depend upon what the purpose of the report is. Introductions can have subheadings. They can have subheadings like, you know, aim, purpose, methodology, etc., etc. It can describe scientific research methods. In scientific reports, an introduction will also include a literature review. So in an academic sense, what has been done before? Where does this research sit in the context of other research that you're doing? Now, in a business report, it probably isn't necessary to have a literature review. That's something that is more academic. But it can be, in some cases, appropriate. It does really depend upon what the report is about. How formal, how academically oriented, if you like, is this report. So, an introduction can define the task or the problem, outline the aims or the purpose. Depending upon the audience to the report, and maybe if they are an audience that is unfamiliar with the, with what the report is going to be about, it may give background information. What do they need to know in order to understand what you're writing about? How will they, if you're presenting something that is persuasive, what kind of information or positions, etc., will they need to know in order to understand and appreciate the arguments that the report is making? The introduction can also outline the research methods. How have you gathered this information? Now, as I said, in scientific reports, this is called the methodology. The methodology in scientific reports is very, very specific. If you've done a survey, for example, how many people have you surveyed? What kind of research instruments did you use? What was the time frame for your survey? Etc. Reports can also identify the terms of reference or the scope or the limitations. And again, these, particularly the limitations and the scope, are very important within scientific reports. What areas of the topic are covered or not covered and why? So basically what you're doing in that case is very methodically, if you like, describing the parameters, the guidelines from which you are coming, from which you are writing and speaking. Okay. Alright. Now, the second major element is the discussion or the body. Now, this is a really general section, but how it's set out and how information is constructed really will depend again, once again, on the body of the report itself. Okay, so main ideas, information, headings and numbering systems that show organisational structure and internal relationships. So just as we saw when we looked at that sample table of contents, the numbering system, the index, the use of upper or lower case, etc., font sizes, etc., should consistently show what the relationship of these sections or subsections are to each other. Now, and a report will differ from an essay in the sense that it generally speaking presents arguments or facts around a central proposition or an argument in an objective, balanced and unbiased manner. Now that's the objective, that doesn't always happen, but it's an important consideration to make. It tends to be factual, so it's information, not your opinion, not your view, but information that you have gathered from either primary or secondary sources, and it should be relevant, and most importantly, it should be up to date. So if you get information from, you know, a secondary source, you need to cite it, you need to say where does it come from, and how useful that information is, how persuasive that information can very often depend upon how old it is. So it's pretty close to trying to argue about something fairly recent with old statistics, for example. And in the option, you know, if you're looking at something where you're trying to evaluate an argument, the pros and cons of perhaps a particular course of action, the body of the discussion section can also explore these. Look at the alternatives, look at the pros and cons. But again, they need to be referred to in the recommendation section of the book. Okay. The body can include things such as, all right, an explanation of a problem or an opportunity. Maybe facts, statistical evidence, trends. Maybe reference to studies, other studies or investigations and those results. Discussion analysis of potential causes of action, the pros and cons, the advantages, disadvantages, costs, benefits, and so on. Maybe the procedures and the steps for a particular process, methods and approaches to, you know, a particular problem, maybe description of those and evaluation of those. And the criteria for evaluating alternatives and options. Alright, now ultimately the end part, the conclusion, the aim of that, whereas the body or the discussion section of the report should aim to put the facts on the table, so to speak. The conclusion winds it up. The conclusion is where the writer has the option to put in their own opinions, if you like, to further their own opinions. Generally speaking, reports are written in a very objective, straightforward kind of a way. They're not generally emotive, it's not generally hysterical, they can be persuasive. But the function of the conclusion is to summarise. So quite often people read the conclusion. They won't necessarily read all the bits, so I'll read the conclusion. So what did you conclude from looking at this? Okay. It's where the facts are interpreted. Now, usually interpreted in relation to the purpose. Okay. I often refer to this as the so what section. The so what. So where people read this and they go, well, that's all very nice, but so what? So as the writer, what you are basically doing is telling the reader, so what, this is what I had aimed to do here. Now they may not necessarily agree that you've done that, but this is what they've aimed to do. Conclusions don't contain new information or new ideas. Okay, they're merely summaries of what and they make reference to the information and new ideas that are in the body of the discussion. They should tell, in a fairly direct way, how the report purpose has been achieved. So what have we done here? And again, as I said, that doesn't mean that the reader necessarily has to agree that you have achieved that. And ultimately, what do we do next? What do we do now with this information? And that can ultimately be taken up in more detail in the recommendations. Now, as I said earlier, not all reports have recommendations. Recommendations are actions, right? Action steps. Usually aims to solve problems, answer questions, provide a list of solutions or a solution. Okay. They always relate to the research findings. It's not something, you don't just sort of something pulled out of the air, it has to be related to the research findings. Quite often presented in point or paragraph format, so you know, you have an eating recommendation and you'll have a new paragraph for each one, or sometimes it can be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or maybe all of them, whatever. But only those reports, as I said, were set out to solve, investigate or analyse problems will have recommendations. So if you don't have them, if it's not that kind of report, that's okay. Alright. Now we've talked about bibliographies before, and again, I just want to reiterate, they must list all sources of information, usually presented alphabetically. Okay. And they don't have to be books or things like that, as I said. Could be internal sources, could be interviews, etc. Other company reports. Wherever possible, with the date that information was available. Now, in some cases, you will find that, some cases you may not. Depending upon the conventions of, or the requirements of the company, or in our case, maybe the school, as to what system. So, you know, you look at Harvard, ACA, NLA. Now, those style sheets, if you like, are available via our BWS library website. So, different schools will have preference for different systems. The major thing is that you are consistent. That you use the style properly and that you are consistent with the way that you use. You don't tend to mix and match. You don't have, say, Harvard with, which is internal referencing, with footnotes, for example. Footnoting is a different form of altogether. The bibliography, as you would be aware from your other academic work, should enable a reader to either research further or to maybe check the veracity of your information. So particularly if you use statistics and things like that. Are those statistics being used properly? Are they used in the context in which they were gathered? Are you using them appropriately to further your argument? And the most important thing is that you include all elements, including internet research. And internet research must have, at the minimum, the URL of the website and the access date, the date that you access that information on the web. The reason being that, as we know, the web is very transient, and a page that is there one day may well not be there the next day. Okay. Now, some reports have an appendix or appendices level, and that can be where additional material is included. So if you have something that's perhaps, you know, bulky, charts, tables, readings, other supporting data, which may be too bulky or too detailed to include in the body of the report. If you're doing an evaluation, say, of a range of material, technical machines or something like that, you know, computers, you're evaluating the pros and cons of purchasing a particular one, you may want to include, you know, the sales brochures. Now, you wouldn't do that in the body of the report. You'd put it in the appendix and you'd make reference to it. Appendices can include a glossary, which again is a list of terms and things like that. But the important thing with appendices is that you make reference to it. You tell the reader within the text, you know, refer to Appendix 1 or Appendix 2 or whatever. Don't just put it there and hope that they can figure out why it's there. You need to make reference to it and to inform them fairly clearly of why it's there. Okay. Now, one of the major things that distinguishes a report from other forms of professional writing or from an essay is a very well-defined and clearly identifiable organisational structure. Now, that organisational structure can consist of heading, a numbering system, or both. And as I have there, it provides a roadmap. It allows the reader to see where the report is going. It allows them to see, okay, this is a subsection of this, because the, you know, it's indented and the font is small or whatever. Numbering systems, you know, can be, you know, many and various. They can be, you know, alphabetical, ABCD. They can be, you know, decimal numbering systems, 1, 1.1, 1.2, etc. And it doesn't really matter as long as it's fairly clear what the relationship is between the sections and subsections. Headings also have the function of allowing a reader to skim to the part that they want to read. And that's important. Readers don't want to have to, you know, plough through a whole bunch of text to get to the bit, because they are using this in business. Time is money. They want to just get to, you know, to the relevant part. So having a heading allows them to do that. Another element of organisational structure is the way that it's written, the way that these things are written. And that also includes the way that sentences and paragraphs flow, the way that they relate to each other, the way that the transition elements move the reader from one part to the next, to show how that they are related. Now, what that means is that if, say, for example, you're using a quotation, if it's referring to something, you need to have a device which shows, you know, why that is there. So, you know, if you're going to use a quotation, have a sentence or a part of a sentence, a clause which introduces it. So to illustrate this point, for example, so-and-so said such and such, okay, and then go on to the quote of such and such, rather than just put the quotation in there for the reader to figure out, well, what's this related to and, you know, how does it work. At the end of each section, there should be a summary, or a little bit like a conclusion summary, but it's a conclusion to show how the, what you're going to go on to next, and how, what is the relationship of this bit to the bit that follows. Now, this particular diagram, again, illustrates the way that an organisational structure related to, you know, investigating different types of computers, for example, all right, computer stores. And I've used decimal numbering system here. You can see how, you know, in each of these, what it does is show the sections and the subsections on a range of different levels. Now, this is a fairly complex one, but, you know, you don't have to, it doesn't need to be that particular, complex.